So, you know, what I love about Unitarian Universalism is that we really like asking the big questions of life, don't we? We not only ask them, but we seek to answer these questions with no limitations, with no thou shalt nots. There was a New Yorker cartoon shows a woman reassuring her husband, saying, "Don't worry, Howard, the big questions are multiple choice." Well, I wouldn't go that far. I think the big questions really require a lifetime of struggle and growth, and that's what our congregations are here for, is to help us in that. It seems apparent that one of our primary purposes as human beings is to ask the big questions and then to seek out answers that give us meaning and joy in our lives. It's not just that we want to know, it's more that we have to know. We have to know those questions and those answers. Now, perhaps the most gigantic question of all, and it's one of that most of us wrestle with from childhood to the grave, is how big is God? Now, you might think the bigger question is whether you believe in God or not, but I think it goes deeper than that. How big is God for you? Is God a reality that fills your life, or just a small part of who you are, or just a curiosity, or is God non-existent? One of the most common questions I was asked by newcomers was, "What does your church believe about God?" Now, I usually responded that historically, Unitarian Universalism has stood for the belief in one God and the unity of divinity as opposed to the Christian Trinity. Now, maybe we just lack math skills. We couldn't, you know, we couldn't work with all those fractions and everything. I don't know. We just didn't get that Trinity thing. But our Unitarian Universalist concept of God has changed over the centuries. In most of our congregations, and I'm sure here as well, there's a wide variety of theists, agnostics, mystics, pagans, humanists, and atheists worshiping together. You're sitting right there side by side and nobody's hurting each other. As one jokester put it, I'm sure you've heard this, Unitarian Universalists believe in at most one God. And let me see, that's not him. No. That's not the one. Do you recognize this God? One of my favorites. Who? Monty Python. That's a Monty Python God. I love this God. How can you not love him? Now, those new to our, you won't have to watch him the whole service, but he's a little spooky, isn't he? Now, those new to our congregations are often surprised that non-theists are embraced as fellow spiritual sojourners, and that our religion is defined by deeds, not creeds, by what we do in the world more than what we believe. But we also recognize that it does matter what we believe. We have no creed that requires a dogmatic set of beliefs, but instead we urge each person to build a belief system upon the foundation of their own personal experiences. Now, many Unitarian Universalists have had the experience of the God we were raised to believe in being pulled out from under us at some point in our lives. Now, I grew up as a Southern Baptist up the road in Jacksonville, and I remember having this sudden revelation as a teenager that what I was being told by the church was utter nonsense. I was instructed to believe in this all-powerful and loving God who would send anyone who didn't believe in him, and of course wasn't a Southern Baptist, to hellfire and damnation. Now, that kind of contradictory description just didn't make sense to me. And so I decided after a long and painful struggle that I had no room in my life for such a cruel and small deity. And at that point, I became an atheist. At first, I was totally desolated, but later there came a feeling of elation and liberation, an awareness that I was free to be myself. I was no longer ruled over by a manipulative and maniacal cosmic power. I had responsibility for controlling my own fate. Now, this certainly doesn't happen to everyone. There are those who go through life never having any doubts about the existence of a benevolent God. And that experience is just as valid as that of the skeptic. But for those of us who have experienced the death of God, we have had to make a momentous decision whether to transform our concept of divinity into something that does make sense to us, or whether to assume there is no God at all. Now, the atheist proclaims that there is no need for the concept of God. Literally, that's what is that? Oh, yeah, there you go. There's the atheist. Literally, that's what atheism means, without God. Fulton Sheen described the atheist very well as a person who has no invisible means of support, right? I like that. And it's true. The atheist says what's here is here, that God is an illusion. Humanity has been tricked into believing not much different from Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny. The major objection of the atheist is that God just doesn't make sense. In the words of the infamous atheist Clarence Darrow, in spite of all the yearnings of humanity, no one can produce a single fact or reason to support the belief in God and in personal immortality. The evidence for God's existence is scant at best. If we rely on the revelations of science and modern thought, then the concept of God cannot be taken seriously. Those who do believe insist that we must rely on faith rather than reason. But the atheist revolts against such a denigration of reason and agrees with H.L. Mencken when he wrote, "Faith may be defined briefly as an illogical belief in the occurrence of the improbable." Oh, yeah. Now, in 1869, Thomas Huxley, the English intellectual, coined the word agnosticism, which comes from the Greek meaning unknown. In religious terms, it's the view that we don't know if there's a God or not, and I'm sure there's agnostics out here today. In Huxley's own words, agnosticism simply means that individuals shall not say they know or believe that for which they have no ground for professing to believe. The agnostic would agree with Thomas Edison, who wrote, "We do not know 1/1,000,000% about anything," right? Or, in the words of Norman Ford, "Never try to tell everything you know. It may take too short a time." So true. Now, the theist, on the other hand, is a person who does believe in God, but not necessarily, and this is where we forget sometimes, what we UUs forget sometimes, not necessarily a supernatural and anthropomorphic deity. The Buddhist Lama Surya Das writes that when people ask me, "Does God exist?" I usually reply, "What do you mean by God?" Because there are as many concepts of God out there as there are people. That word probably sets off more fireworks in the brain than just about anything, because the entire concept of divinity is based not only on our personal experience, but on our imagination. There are people who can only imagine the God they grew up with, or a God who is simply a projection of themselves, and that's a very small God. But what a waste, since the possibilities of divinity are endless. There are some theists, a modest theist, I think, who dare to use their imagination by looking beneath those myriad masks of God to the ultimate reality itself. Now, God is, in the words of Paul Tillich, the most renowned Protestant theologian of the 20th century, God is the ultimate reality, which means that when you cut through all the layers of supernaturalism and superficiality, you find God at the very heart of life. Tillich had the gall to say that God does not exist, which got him into a lot of trouble with the fundamentalist. But Tillich didn't stop there. He went on to say, God does not exist. He is being, that is B-E-I-N-G. but beyond essence and existence. Therefore, to argue that God exists is to deny him. Now, I dare you to try that one on your Christian friends. Now, when people ask me if I believe in God, I'm tempted to answer that question with the words of Voltaire. To believe in God is impossible. Not to believe in God is absurd. To truly understand God, we must get beyond the concept of believing or not believing. Instead, we need to talk about whether we experience God or not. Now, the God experience is our actual encounter with the holy or with the ultimate reality or the essence of life, whatever you want to call it. You know, we don't know what to call these things, but we know what they are in our minds and spirits. When we experience the holy, we discover that we don't have the words, the images, or even the thoughts to conceive what we've encountered. We realize that every conception of God is limited and inadequate and deceptive. The Christian Saint Augustine once issued a warning to ministers who were driven to preach about God. If you understand it, he said, then it is not God. Isn't that good? I'm not paying any attention to it, but still. Now this one's even better. This is even better. A 12th century philosopher described God eloquently in one short sentence. And that is, God is an intelligible sphere whose center is everywhere and circumference nowhere. Use your imagination. God is an intelligible sphere whose center is everywhere and circumference nowhere. Now that beautifully describes the paradox that we cannot fully comprehend the ultimate reality. Whatever God belief we embrace, I think it's vital that we do not grasp hold in a dogmatic or obsessive way. I like to imagine myself dancing with the holy, at times embracing and at other times moving apart, but always attempting to remain in rhythm and relationship. When I'm told that God is a cosmic general who manipulates and terrorizes and subjugates, then I am an atheist. When I hear God proclaimed as a definite fact or fiction, then I am an agnostic. When I experience my unity with life, my oneness with the universe, then I am a mystic. Not imagining God as a supernatural, otherworldly being, but as an infinite, unconditional, unlimited source of all life. Now, I know that by naming God, we necessarily diminish divinity. And yet, the very nature of human beings is to name everything, whether we understand it or not. If we must use words to describe the divine, I prefer to call God the great mystery, which is a term from the Lakota Sioux, because I believe God is the greatest of all mysteries. We can never completely encompass the holy in our thinking or feeling. It's too vast, too deep, too mysterious. What I've discovered, however, is that even though I cannot fully comprehend this great mystery, I can respond to it. And that is my purpose in life. That is to relate to the ultimate reality as creatively, as lovingly, as powerfully as possible. Sometimes I see God as having no face, image, shape, or form, as a force, a void of mysterious energy that flows through all creation. And at other times, I see God as having a multitude of faces, not only the faces of all the gods of all religions, but also the faces of 7 billion human beings on this planet, as well as all the creatures. In the words of Pablo Casal, in music, in the sea, in a flower, in a leaf, in an act of kindness, I see what people call God in all these things. And I see God as a verb, as Bucky Fuller did. Remember Bucky, the futurist? He wrote a poem called No More Secondhand God. And he said, God to me, it seems, is a verb, not a noun, proper or improper, is the articulation, not the art, objective or subjective, is loving, not the abstraction love commanded or entreated. Knowledge dynamic, not legislative code, not proclamation law, not academic dogma, not ecclesiastic canon. Yes, God is a verb, the most active, connoting the vast harmonic reordering of the universe from unleashed chaos of energy. Oh, he said it so well. And this is how I experience God, and yet I know that the word and the concept is not necessary. It was the Christian mystic Meister Eckhart who said that God is beyond names and forms, and the ultimate and highest leave-taking is leaving God for God. And this is one of the biggest challenges for a spiritual person, that is to leave the notion of God for the experience of the holy, or to put it another way, the experience of mystery and unity and love. So perhaps God is not a big deal for you, or perhaps divinity is non-existent altogether. It doesn't matter. What matters is how big the holy is for you. And I choose to call the holy God, but you can call it whatever name you wish or no name at all. But let us never forget that the purpose of our lives is to experience this mystery, this unity, this love, and then to respond to it with a sense of wonder, of deep connection, and a commitment to morality and justice. Now, that's why Unitarian Universalism, for me, is the experience of unity and connection. Unitarianism, unity and connection, and that's combined with a commitment to respond with universal and unconditional love. That's universalism. Unitarian Universalism, a wonderful faith for all of us. To sum up my belief about God, I borrow the words of John Cyrus, who said, "To believe in God is to believe in life, in all of it. The farthest star that I can see is part of the human environment. It is part of the whole in which I live and move and have my being. As a religious person, I behold it with imperfect comprehension and say, God." This is my belief in God, the affirmation of one's whole existence. Amen and amen.